Hello and welcome to another interview in the series Coffee with Craig. This interview is with Rich, and what a nice guy he is. I particularly like his philosophy and general outlook on life. Be open to change, enjoy life now, and don't plan too much for the future. And love yourself for who you are, including your thoughts and imperfections. Here's the full, unedited version of the interview with Rich. Remember, you can see the edited video version of this interview and many more interviews on our Mansión Inglés YouTube channel and on our website at mansionengles.com and on our podcast website at inglespodcast.com. Trying to place your accent, and I think, where are you from originally?
I'm from, it's starting now, I take it. I'm from a little town in between Liverpool and Manchester. It's called Warrington. Okay. Obviously, it's not particularly well known. I don't think any of your viewers would know where it was.
But did you go to university around there?
No, I was there for a couple of years, for the first 2 years of my life, and then because of job opportunities, we were going to move to Liverpool, and then something happened, and my dad ended up moving down. Well, not my dad, we all ended up moving down. Result of my dad getting a job to about 40 miles east of London. So that's probably why I've got a bit of a mixed accent.
That's more or less where I'm from.
Oh, really? Essex. I grew up, yeah. Just
which
outside
part?
Southend in Hadley, a little tiny little town.
Okay. I grew up in Ilford.
Oh, really? Ah, okay. Oh, a bit closer towards London.
Well, Redbridge, Gants Hill, but East London.
Yeah. Okay, fair enough.
That's interesting.
Yeah, very good. But so that's why I probably got like a mix of accents, because at home then obviously I heard everyone Bath Class and Headmaster and all that lot, and then outside at home obviously is Essex. So I've got this weird
Long
little
stops, SG
mix.
English.
Yeah, exactly, all of this. So and then I went and I studied up in Lancaster for a couple of years. Then I moved down to Brighton with my friends for about 5 years. Then up to Oxford where I did another degree, and then back to Essex, and so I've got a bit of a
What did you study?
Fine arts. Yeah.
And did you work in fine arts? I mean, have you always been teaching?
No. It was a little bit of serendipity, basically, the way it's worked out. Just because, so before I came here, then I was working down in Brighton with my friends. We all moved out to follow the rock and roll dream. We sort of went over there as a band plus all our mates to go and take over the world kind of thing. I used to play the drums, and we thought we had massive visions of grandeur.
What sort of music did you play?
Indie rock, I guess. Yeah, kind of harmonic indie rock, I'd say.
And this was around the 80s?
No, blimey. That would have been, I don't know. So if I was, I'd have been about
punk.
20, so I guess, yeah. It'd have been like, I suppose about 98, 99, I guess, we moved down there. This is the plan, but then obviously the sort of the day-to-day grind took over, and I just started working in offices instead, and sort of justified this existence that I hated by sort of at the same time thinking, but I know inside that I'm going to be a rock and roll star, and all this sort of rubbish, obviously, this sort of delusion.
But did you get gigs? Did you play?
Oh, yeah. We played, and obviously we thought that we were very good, but I think we were just a bit lazy and rested on our laurels. We thought, well, we've got a good song, so people should come to us and discover us, but we realised that I think if you want to make it in this, in any business, obviously, you need to, you've got to go out there and you just got to sell yourself.
Did you have a manager?
No. We didn't even get that far. It was just literally just doing gigs and basically just be like our mates plus other hanger-ons and all that sort of stuff. And no, it was mainly, I think looking back, it was just a bit of a laugh with.
So what sort of office jobs? You said you were doing office jobs.
I worked in banks for about 3 years. I worked as like a personal assistant for a couple of years. Just generally sort of administrative, soulless work, basically, that I just hated, and it wasn't me in the slightest. And then one day I sort of woke up and had a little bit of a revelation and just thought, I need to get out of this life because it's not good. So then I went to university. So I went to university when I was 25, I think. Mm-hmm. So a little bit of a late bloomer, but I wasn't really ready when I was younger. I don't think I was mature enough.
So the fine arts degree, that was first, and then when you went back when you were 25?
No, that was the fine arts degree when
I
was 25. It was just this kind of, okay. I mean, I'd always been interested in arts and all that lot. I studied art at college and things like that. Excuse me. So it was a... Maybe it was just this reaction to having lived in this kind of very constricted life, kind of like in the offices for 5 years, to then suddenly like, right, I need to get out, and the best way was to go and study fine arts. Mm-hmm. And when I started, the plan was to be an artist, and I didn't really know how that was going to happen, kind of thing. But then along the course, I realised that I fell out of love with the world of art, because I think it's more about making contacts and who you know, and rather than actually just being
judging you on your work.
A good artist,
what,
exactly.
What medium did you use?
I started off painting and did a bit of sculpting, mm-hmm. and then went into video editing and what would you call it? Live installations, video installations, basically. I think you've got to be really, really dedicated to do it. You've got to really want to do it. It's not the sort of thing that you can just say, well, I'm quite creative, so therefore I can make a career out of art. I don't think that happens.
Basically. So how did you get into teaching?
Oh, yeah, that was the purpose, wasn't it?
I'm going to start my case.
Okay, now go for your life. Good luck.
Tell us about teaching.
So I finished my degree. I thought, right, what can I do to try and sort of keep my hand in the degree? So while I was doing my degree, I went over and did an Erasmus year in the Bauhaus in Germany, and this was fantastic, just being there, walking around the same streets where, and drinking in the same pub where Itten, one of like a hero of mine, used to sort of sit there, maybe designed his colour principles and things like that. It was just really inspiring. And while I was there, then I was living with some Spanish people, had a Spanish girlfriend, just hung around with lots of Spanish people, and just started learning Spanish and fell in love with Spanish culture.
Had you been to Spain by then?
While I was, I'd been on a family holiday, we sort of hired a villa.
Where did you go?
Coincidentally, it wasn't too far away from here, actually. It was just in between, I suppose. It was a villa in the mountains. I couldn't tell you what village it was near. But
to the south?
Near Alicante, just outside Alicante, I suppose. One of, like, a mate of my dad's bought it as a retirement place, and in the meantime, before he retired, he was hiring it out to...
And it's probably around where my parents live, around that area.
Ah, okay. That is a lovely place, incredible holiday.
Beautiful, yeah.
Yeah. Going to the markets and getting fresh produce and come back and cooking it on the barbecue every day. Mm-hmm. It was wonderful times.
Well, what came first, teaching or your love for Spain?
So while I was finishing my degree, I was thinking, okay, I know that I want to go to Spain. I had like a Spanish girlfriend, and I was thinking it's all leading towards this to something different, and maybe doing some kind of creative work over there. And so I was looking for jobs in video editing over in Spain. There's like a new studio that just opened up outside Alicante, so I was looking for there, I was sort of applying for work and things like that, and I thought, right, okay, I finished university, I'm going to save up some money. I did a load of factory jobs and all this sort of stuff just to work until I had enough money to live here for a couple of months, and then just before I came, I suddenly had the brainwave, hold up, if it doesn't work out, I need something to fall back on. So I came and did a CELTA, first thing over here, it was the first thing I did, did the CELTA, loved it, started teaching straight away and just fell in love with teaching instantly, basically.
Wow, that's so interesting. So you haven't been teaching that long?
No, I was my mum was a teacher, my uncle was a teacher, and so when I was at college, then I wanted to be a teacher. But then, like I say, I sort of went off and did a sort of follow this rock and roll route for 7 or 8 years, and so that kind of took me away from that, and then went to art college, obviously, and then sort of took me away. So when it came back, it's something that obviously I thought about when I was younger. I had some experience like a teaching assistant like in a primary school. So it wasn't like a million miles away, but when it came, it was a surprise, and I just loved it and stuck with it, basically.
Okay.
Yeah.
What do you like most about teaching?
The people, just meeting different people, meeting interesting people every day. No 2 days are the same. Everything depends completely on you can have anything planned, and you can walk into the classroom and it can completely change. No, obviously, as you know. And so I love this. I love the fact that you're always switched on when you're in the classroom. You've got to be completely aware. It's your mind's never wandering. You're always aware and focused.
What do you dislike about it?
the administration, basically the admin, the writing reports, the paperwork. It's not a major hatred, it's just the fact that I know it comes with the part and parcel of the job, but yeah. I would prefer not to have to do it. I know what's going on in my head, I've got it all organised, I know what the kids are like and all that sort of stuff, but I know obviously I need to then.
Do you prefer teaching kids or adults?
I prefer to have as much variety as possible, just sort of keep it interesting. I teach, at the moment, I teach a lot of private adult classes, mm-hmm. teach business classes, large groups of adults is fantastic, obviously, because you can get them talking.
That's
my favourite. Yeah. He's, I, you just, I don't know.
It's the most motivated, usually, and you don't have to be a policeman in the classroom.
Yeah, no,
you can
exactly.
Just go with, you know, with their motivation.
They're aiming to do it. They've got this, and they're doing it for a reason. They know why they're doing it. They haven't been sent by their parents.
So how long have you been in Spain?
I was just going to say sorry, but having said that, then probably my favourite class is my class. I've got one class of 7-year-olds, and I just love it because you can just go there and act a fool. I was going to say,
and they're well behaved. Play.
Yeah, they're really. It's just a really sweet, innocent little age. They've got no egos. They've got no. I don't know, arrogance or preconceptions of the man. So they just turn up and whatever they're going to do, they've got no expectations, they just go along with it. But as long as you're fair and you keep to what you promise, you keep to what you say, then...
They behave themselves.
Yeah, they're good. Right.
Okay. So how long have you been living here?
Coming up to 5 years now. We're close to 5 years. 5 years in September it'll be.
And what's the hardest thing for you about making a life here? Because you've been here for a while.
I think the weirdest thing is because when you first come here, everybody else has obviously got established lives and friendships here and all that sort of stuff, so you kind of meet the people who are like you, who are new to the town, so it involves like other English teachers or their students or stuff like that, so it's all good, but then obviously the problem with them is some people come here just to try out life for a little while and and then they disappear, no? So after like about 2 years here, basically all my best friends suddenly, one sort of followed his heart to Pamplona, one went to do a PhD in Madrid, and other people went back to England because the teaching was just kind of an experimentation or whatever, something to get away from office jobs for a little while.
To fill in the gap.
Yeah, exactly. So I'd say after about 2.5 years, you suddenly start. I was living on my own in Malvarosa, and it was fantastic living by the beach. I had my own pad. It was all cool. But then, hello. But then all of a sudden, you start realising that it's a completely different culture, and all the sort of the nuances that were interesting and charming and quirky and all that at first suddenly start beginning to grate a little bit, and you just sort of, I don't know, get a little bit... I remember like living in Malvarosa, then it would just take me an age just to walk to the shops because I'd always get stuck behind old women.
Which part of Malvarosa?
The Avenida de Malvarosa. It was just...
I've been living in Calle Cavite.
I don't know.
It's parallel.
Oh, really? Oh, okay, right, okay, fair play. If you get like the 19 bus, it goes along. Okay.
You're not there anymore?
No. Unfortunately, my landlord put the rent up, and I was just sort of spending like 2 hours on the bus every day going back and forth between classes, so now I'm in Benimaclet, which is very handy for work. But basically, it's just there comes a point when you've got to sort of accept, okay, you're a foreigner here, you're... it's you who's different, it's you who's got to adapt, and as soon as you sort of accept and adapt to this, the differences again, then since that moment, since I've realised that and I've accepted that we're different, I've just fallen in love again with living here.
So do you see your near future here? Any plans to move
elsewhere? Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean,
for a while?
I think the most important thing is to be open to the change, to anything that comes along, basically. I've just... I've been going out with a Spanish girl for about 8 or 9 months now, and I'm falling in love with her, and everything's hunky-dory, basically. Job's going well. I love Valencia, I love my girlfriend. I'm just, if something happens, I'm open to change, but at the end of the day, I'll see what happens when it does.
Why did you decide to do the diploma?
It was... Partly, I suppose, because obviously you've always got to keep on improving, you've always got to keep on learning. Partly because I suppose I started getting into a bit of a routine in my classes and I wanted to freshen things up. Partly because I know that I've got a lot to learn. I've only been teaching for, 4 years, 4.5 years. So I've got a lot to learn. Partly because I felt a sort of a little bit of expectation from the institution that this was... I should do it. Do you know what I mean? It would be my best interest to do this, and also because I got the impression that the funding might not last forever, and so it's a case of do it now or never.
I did it years ago. In fact, so long ago it was called something else, but I remember it being a really difficult, arduous course. Looking back, do you think it was worth the time invested? I mean, would you recommend it to a teacher in your position or the position that you were in? With the certificate, taking that next step and doing it?
Very much so. I mean, like I say, I've got no kids, I've got no mortgage, I've got a girlfriend, but at the end of the day, I haven't really got any kind of... I've got time, basically, is what I mean to say. I had time, and so it seemed like it was the best opportunity to do it. I imagine if you've got two or three kids, I'd say be prepared, because there are times when you're going to be having to do a lot of work. And,
absolutely. What's been your most memorable moment in the classroom?
In the first year, I think it's all... Well, the first couple of years, they're all memorable, aren't they? Because you're just learning so much. Everything is new. You've got new classes, new levels. So in my first year, it's just, I suppose... Obviously, there's lots of heartwarming moments, but I'll talk about a couple of the weirdest moments. When my first class happened, finished the CELTA course, which is obviously learning how to teach adults, and my first class was 4- and 5-year-olds, and I had... No experience
about
this.
I mean, I taught children, it's a completely different, methodology.
And I had nothing. Basically, so on the first day, like my boss said to me, have you met Norton? And Norton, who's just like, it's just another teacher or whatever. And Norton was a toy parrot that I was meant to use to turn the pages in the book, and I was just thinking, what am I doing here? If my friends could see me now. There's another one.
Did you keep on with Norton through the term, or did you put him in a box?
Norton came out from time to time, and as soon as Norton came out, the kids would just want to try and pull his eyes out and all that. Poor Norton got...
That's your lovely 7-year-old.
Yeah, exactly. Like 4 and 5-year-olds these were. Poor Norton, after being abused for several months, got put back in the box. There's other times when I remember, because obviously on the CELTA course you learn all these mingle exercises and things like that, always, when we were doing one of those with these 10-year-olds, 10 and 11-year-olds, and I remember... I was listening and, identifying errors and putting them on the board so we could look at them afterwards, treating it as if they were an adult class, obviously. Mm-hmm. And as I was writing something on the board, I turned around and there's this little 10-year-old girl lying on the floor doing snow angels on the floor in the middle of the class. And I was just, what do I do? I chose to just ignore her. I just stepped over her and carried on listening to other class. And it turns out it was the right thing to do because she just stood back
just
up, didn't get the attention.
In.
Yeah, exactly. But I'd say the worst one, I'm sorry, I'm going to go, just get this one out. Was when I learnt that you can never lose your temper, you can never get angry. As soon as you get angry with kids, then you've lost, basically. One time, before I realised this, obviously, I was against the point. I was trying to say to them, right, okay, I'm gonna have a chat with them today. So I walked in, slammed their books on the table. I was like, right, this is not, all in Spanish. This was this is the worst class I've got. I teach all these different students, and you're the worst of the lot. This rant went on for like about 5 or so minutes or something like that, and at the end, I was building up to this new word. I just learned how to say I'm fed up in Spanish. And so I slammed the books and I said again on the desk and I said, estoy completamente harta. And the kids just went, bah, eres just una chica. And I was like, oh, okay, fair enough. And that was the moment I realised you need to... Prevention is better than cure. No, if you make the classes interesting, if you make them fun, then you don't lose them and you don't have to lose your rag.
When you feel your blood boiling over, just count to 10 or walk out of the class and come back in again.
Well, exactly. I don't know about walking out of the class with leaving the kids in there. I don't know if you're allowed to do that. But no, exactly. Just, I don't know, if they're sitting in the same team, Rich, what does crap mean? And you just have to go, I don't know, it means nothing. Just show no reaction, don't react. Yeah. But that, I guess.
Rich, technology. How has technology affected the way you teach? And how does it affect the way your students learn?
I'd say the way that I teach, I think it's just a better way to stimulate students, to activate what they're thinking about before you, to engage them before you then start actually teaching what you want to teach.
Are you a big fan of technology? I mean, do you use a lot of technology in the class?
I'm not a massive fan of writing on the interactive whiteboards and all that sort of stuff, but I love using big videos and big images with sound and stuff like that to really engage students, to get them into it, to get them talking about something. I think it's a lot easier.
Have you created that? Do you use PowerPoint or another software?
I just take my laptop in and just plug it into the projector. So normally just like recorded YouTube, download YouTube videos. PowerPoint's good. I think I've got a different version of PowerPoint. I can't remember what it is now, but
not
a free alternative one. Exactly. Kingsoft, maybe, or something like that. But, I think, obviously, kids need different stimulation. You can't just put a piece of paper in front of them these days and expect them to get stimulated by a grammar-matching exercise. It's not going to work. They demand other things. For example, I love, instead of, read this text, and now we're going to extract things, to answer questions from it. They find it more stimulating to go to the internet Okay, look for information about that, summarise things that they've found from the internet that have interested them, mm-hmm. and teach each other what they've learned. And it's the same thing as we used to do with books, I guess, or with texts, but they think that they're not in the classroom, they get the impression they're doing something fun or that they're winning.
Okay, so I mean, you said you teach here, you teach, and you've got private lessons. What do you do when you're not teaching? What do you do with your time?
I love cooking, and I love eating good food. That's my primary love. I love cooking for my girlfriend. I love having her cook for me. Mm-hmm. I love just sharing good food with her, and just going to decent restaurants. I just found a new restaurant in town. That's just fantastic. The chef is just incredible. He just does all this.
One?
It's called Delicat. I don't know if I want to say it because I don't want everybody to go there and
spoil
just,
it for you.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's just incredible. Basically, this bloke's just got this amazing gift for blending little intricate flavours together.
Is it a Valenciana restaurant or?
It's all sort of modern cooking. And if you go in the evening, it's all quite Japanese influenced. In the daytime, it's kind of, I suppose, Spanish influenced, but just deconstructed and put back together.
There's
again
a very good
way.
Restaurant I've discovered near. Where is it? It's called Appetite. Do you know it? It's Asian fusion.
Okay.
I'll give you the address after.
Fantastic, like wonderful. Yeah. So that's the other thing, just discovering nice new restaurants in town and things like that. I love watching football. I like painting. I like playing my guitar.
You still play?
Yes, not the guitar.
Music. You still create?
Yes, yeah. It's unfortunate because I can't have a drum kit here, so I'm saving up for an electric drum kit because obviously it's flat friendly. No. But
Consider joining a band here?
Playing the drums?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd love to. Yeah, definitely. Why are you?
I'm not a musician. No, but if anyone's watching.
Okay.
If anyone's watching, like to hook up in the Valencia area?
Yeah, exactly. That'd be funny, just something to pass the time, just have a bit of fun, basically, nothing too serious.
Okay.
Put
it out there.
Be a crack, why not? Exactly.
Rich, what advice would you give Spanish speakers who are trying to learn English?
Don't be afraid to make mistakes. I'd say it's better to try and fail than to not try at all. I don't know who said that, but I'm stealing it. And don't worry about what other people think, basically. You've got to talk, you've got to communicate, and it's the communication, the expression that's more important.
That's a common problem in my conversation classes, that they've scudded grammar, they've got wide vocabulary, but there's that shyness there, that feeling that as if they open their mouth and a mistake comes out, it's the end of the world. It isn't.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's good advice.
The person who I started learning Spanish off, my first sort of contact in the Spanish world, was he's still a very good friend of mine. I was the best man at his wedding not that long ago. He makes loads of mistakes. He speaks with a really thick Spanish accent. But he's just a really charismatic, friendly, affable chap, basically. And he would just always tell stories, like anecdotes and jokes, in this kind of, I don't want to say broken English. He was still quite a good level,
obviously.
But
he's obviously a communicator.
But yeah, exactly.
He can make contact with people.
He didn't care. He'd still ask me. He always had a funny way of sort of saying to me, Rich, how do you say a certain word in English? And I'd tell him. And then he'd sort of wait about 10 or 15 minutes. And then he'd start this story based on this. So he had this sort of plan in his mind. He just needed one little, just a little key to tell the punchline or whatever. But, that was his most redeeming quality was just the fact that he just didn't care. He had a story to tell, and by Jove, he was going to tell it.
So no inhibitions, get out there, start speaking and communicating in English.
Practice. There's no point having all this information. And you can't talk with a book. You can't walk around the streets writing little notes in your notebook and all that sort of stuff. You've got to do it.
Nope. So can you talk a little bit about what you hope to do in the future? You said you're happy here, life's good at the moment. Do you see yourself staying in teaching? Would you like to go into management, materials development, teacher training?
I'm not much of a planner, I have to say. I'm very much, I think if you spend too much time thinking about the future, you don't enjoy what you've got. And life is very good at the moment. I'm very happy. I've just finished a diploma, so I'm going to see how that...
You're going to have a rest over the summer, presumably.
Yeah, exactly. I want to try and incorporate all the new things that I've learned into my teaching. I want to see, like I say, I'm falling deeper in love with a beautiful lady, and I want to see where that goes. I'm happy with Valencia. Mm-hmm. It's just a question of, okay, if something comes, I'm open and ready for it, but I'm not in any rush to change anything right now.
If you could change something about yourself, what would you change?
Okay, let me see. I believe that Okay, if you, I'm sorry, I did think about this before. If you plant two seeds in the ground, either side of a brick wall, basically, and you've got one that's got perfect sunlight and perfect conditions, perfect soil, then it's going to grow exactly as it was genetically programmed to grow, no? If on the other side of the wall you plant it, the soil is isn't so fertile, so the roots have got to grow a little bit further, which sort of stunts the growth of the tree, the plant. Maybe it doesn't get direct sunlight, so it has to sort of twist and turn to reach the sunlight. Maybe the wind's blowing it, so it has to kind of bend itself to brace against the wind. And I think the twists and the contortions and the defects in the plant is what makes it beautiful, no? What makes it interesting, that makes it individual. And I think it's the same for us, basically. I've got things that I need to work on, but I don't know. I'm happy with them because they make me, no? And so,
as well, I used to go out with a girl, American girl, and I used to get very annoyed when I bought something new, mm-hmm. and it would get scratched or damaged or chipped.
Yeah.
And she always used to say to me, "That's what gives it character."
Now
it's got that scratch or that chip, it's got history.
Yeah.
It's a similar analogy.
Exactly.
It's very, very true.
We're animals, no? We've got animal urges, animal desires, we live in this kind of civilized society, but at the end of the day we're sort of monkeys in suits, and I think you have to embrace that and deal
monkeys
with it.
Monkeys in suits.
More or less, no, that's what we are. And you've just got to be a good person, treat other people how you want to be treated yourself, try and be a better person the next day. But I think it's quite sad if you sort of look at yourself and think, "Oh no, I know I'm short, I'm not the best looking, but I'll."
You're a very positive person.
Well, I think that's all that one can do, no?
So, Rich, what makes you happy?
Having a good life, no? Basically, it's just I've got a happy, a healthy family. I've got a beautiful girlfriend. I've got a good, solid. I got a job that I love. That's good.
What makes you sad?
What makes me sad? I didn't think about this one. I don't know. Let me see.
No more carrot cake.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. I'm trying to think what makes me... It's sadness.
Something must
loss,
be
obviously.
Sad.
Loss of... family loss, naturally. On a day-to-day basis, not too much, I believe. You just have to deal with, roll with the punches, no, deal with things as they come. If you can change something, do so. If you can't, don't worry about it, just plough on, basically.
What's your idea of a perfect day?
I couldn't give you a specific example. Perfect day is one where I know that everyone that I love is healthy and happy. I don't know, because I can get as much joy from lying on the settee doing nothing, listening to music. Sometimes you can just get touched by this wonderful emotions to standing on top of a mountain and taking in the view. Do you know what I mean? I think it depends on the moment. As long as everything's good, I don't know. Perfect day. Having eating good food with my girlfriend. Why not?
Rich, which famous person, dead or alive, would you like to have dinner with?
I'm not really good at these types of questions. I'm not much of a...
Is there anyone you really admire? Maybe a musician?
Yeah. I mean, there's loads of people that I wouldn't want to be like a sycophant and sit there at dinner just like going, "Oh, I love your work and all this. Oh, tell me about when you did that." So I don't know if there's anyone... I don't know if I want to find out about them, then maybe I'll sort of read a book about them. Whether there's people that you sort of think, "Oh, I'd like to have a pint with them," or whatever. So if I could, I know they're not famous, if I could choose to have dinner with someone, then I'd choose my grandparents, just because I just like to have a chat with them. No, kind of thing. I might just think, "Oh, okay," asking the questions that I didn't because I was a brooding teenager or whatever, and just sort of go back and think, okay, find out what made them tick when they were kids.
Finally, if you had 6,000 euros to spend on yourself, what would you buy?
I reckon I would take myself and my young lady friend to Japan for a month or something like that, because it's somewhere that we both love to go.
To Japan?
The culture, the spirit, the people. I practice Japanese archery. It's this like Zen practice. So I'd love to go and get a proper Japanese dojo and shoot a few arrows there and just sort of soak up the ambience. So, yeah, and the food. I love the food. So, and because it's just such a long, varied country to sort of go up north and sort of explore the countryside and then come down and see the crazy metropolises, Tokyo. Love to sort of sit in a thermal bath and the kind of, you know, when you got this, I've got this really romantic vision of just like this, the tatami floors and the little paper screen doors and things like that. I'd love to just experience that.
It is an amazing country.
Have you been
there? A few years ago.
Ah,
wow.
Absolutely
well. Fantastic.
How long did you go for?
3 weeks.
Okay.
And very, very easy to move around by
oh, really?
Train.
Yeah. The bullet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Shinkansen. Beautiful people, lovely. But one of our best holidays I've had.
Why did you say, what attracted you to go there?
The same.
Yeah.
The food, the culture. I used to do karate years ago. I've always loved the culture.
Yeah.
Very gentle people, very interesting history. And it really was even, it surpassed my expectations.
Yeah.
Definitely recommend it.
Okay.
And
okay.
Not that expensive. Used to be
oh, really?
Expensive, but not anymore. It's
okay,
really
okay.
Not that expensive to move around. The hotel, the chain hotels are not expensive.
Okay.
So definitely. And great sushi.
Yeah, exactly. This is it. This is what I want. Just gonna drink.
Okay, thank you very much. I didn't know if you can start.
Try a cake, just to sort of like...
You managed
like,
to resist. I've nearly finished.
I'm just gassing too much.
We hope you enjoyed that interview with Rich, and thank you for listening. Please help us by writing a comment on iTunes for us so that more people can find our podcasts. And you can also write a comment or a question about this interview on our Facebook page at facebook.com/mansioningles. On our website at inglespodcast.com or send us a tweet on Twitter at @mansiontwit. Bye for now. The music in this podcast is by Jay Lang. The album is called Drops of H2O, and the track is the Filtered Water Treatment. The music is licensed under Creative Commons license by 3.0 from CC Mixter.com.